an emergency physician, I applaud the Canadian government for doing what they can to improve gun control regulations. I don't know enough about the situation in Nova Scotia to comment very intelligently, but in general, with what we see with gun-related violence, it's obvious that even though Canada, again, does a better job than the United States with gun control, there's still some way to go. And Canadian doctors have called for this in a concerted way over the past few years.
Dr. Tariq Loubani, I want to thank you for being with us. Palestinian-Canadian doctor, emergency room physician based in London, Ontario, Canada. We'll link to your piece in the Washington Post on what's happening in Gaza. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people on site as possible. The majority of our amazing team is working from home. By the way, if you want to get our daily quarantine report, Democracy Now!'s daily show and all its reports and transcript, video and audio podcast form, you can send the word Democracy Now! One word to 66866. Text the word Democracy Now! One word to 66866 or sign up online at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Adriano Contreras, Maria Tarasane. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard, Paul Powell, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm. At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to News Director, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregonians don't expect to feel safe anytime soon, Governor Brown plans to lift medical restrictions, and in national news, Trump suggests fighting COVID-19 with disinfectant. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 24th, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. According to a report in the Albany Democrat Herald, at least 10 workers have tested positive for coronavirus at an Albany frozen food plant. The first two confirmed cases were reported at the National Frozen Food Plant on April 16th, and within a week, the number had grown to 10. On March 20th, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration received a complaint against the plant. The complaint said that the employer was not following the guidelines for proper workplace conditions during the pandemic and that, quote, employees in the workplace that have tested positive for COVID-19 are working side by side with employees not infected, end quote. The plant's management informed the staff in an April 16th memo that there were two cases of COVID-19 at the facility and said that the company had been advised that they should continue with a regular work schedule by the health department. The memo told employees who felt the need to self-quarantine to inform the HR department. Union representatives said that their members were concerned both about the financial impact of not working and the potential health risk to themselves and their families if they continued to work. OSHA confirmed that they visited the plant on April 21st and that an investigation is ongoing. The Linn County Sheriff's Office confirmed that they are assisting in the investigation. The plant is currently closed and undergoing extensive cleaning. According to a survey released Thursday by DHM Research of Portland, Oregonians do not expect to feel safe resuming normal activities anytime soon. This report followed one that came out Wednesday by the company, confirming that 82% of Oregonians supported the state's stay-at-home order. In yesterday's report, residents indicated how many months it would take to feel safe doing a wide range of normal activities. Respondents indicated that it would be 2 months before they would feel safe getting a haircut, 4 months before they'd go to a shopping mall, and 6 months before they'd consider going to a major sporting event. Nearly 60% of respondents said that the availability of widespread testing would be important before they were willing to venture out. Oregonians showed a high level of trust in public health agencies, with 58% giving the CDC very high or high marks, and 55% rating the Oregon Health Authority very high or high. Governor Brown and local governments did not fare quite as well, with 36% awarding them high marks, and many indicating only a medium level of trust. The big loser in the survey was President Trump. 53% of respondents rated their level in trust for the president as low or none. Yesterday, Oregon Governor Kate Brown announced that the state's ban on non-urgent procedures will be lifted on May 1st. Brown said that the state was expecting to receive extremely large shipments of masks and gowns, and that hospitals, doctors, dentists, and other healthcare providers can begin attending to non-critical patient needs next week. The governor's executive order of March 19th had originally postponed all elective procedures until June 15th. The order was intended to ensure that there was a sufficient supply of personal protective equipment available to the healthcare workers who were providing care to COVID-19 patients. But the pending deliveries have reduced the state's concern about possible shortages of PPE, and providers will be permitted to begin performing non-emergency procedures on May 1st, as long as they can minimize the risk of transmission of the coronavirus to patients and healthcare workers. Brown also indicated that the state will be keeping an eye on hospital capacity in case there is a surge in COVID-19 cases in the future. Earlier this month, the Oregon Clinic laid off 820 nurses, nurse practitioners, and physician's assistants, and rural hospitals have been worried about running out of cash due to the end of elective procedures. Yesterday, Burgerville announced a massive layoff of over 600 employees. The Vancouver-based fast food chain furloughed over 1,000 employees last month, and in accordance with regulations from the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries, must lay off individuals out of work for more than 35 days. The layoffs amount to over 40% of the Burgerville workforce, impacting both union and non-union workers. With the decision finalized Monday, workers in both Oregon and Washington are affected, and concerns are being raised from the union, questioning whether laid-off individuals are going to be rehired when the pandemic is over. Burgerville Workers Union spokesman Mark Medina is demanding promises from the restaurant chain. In a statement today, he said, quote, "We won't feel comfortable until we have a signed agreement that meets these exact concerns." Medina also noted the union wants secure plans for workers facing health challenges during COVID-19, specifically workers with elderly family members or households with individuals struggling with compromised immune systems. Representatives from Burgerville have said they can't make these promises at this time, as reopening strategies will reflect changes in protocol, including observances in social distancing. Employees previously receiving health insurance from the company will continue to do so through the end of May, with company officials stating it's unclear how many of those laid off will be included in this category. The shift from furlough to layoff will not impact employee eligibility to receiving unemployment benefits. Of Burgerville's 41 restaurants, 38 are still currently open with drive-thru service available. 5 counties in Southwest Oregon are pushing to begin allowing businesses to reopen. On Wednesday, commissioners in Douglas County announced their intention to send a letter to Governor Kate Brown with the request to reopen on Saturday. The other counties seeking to reopen are Coos, Curry, Josephine, and Jackson. The commissioners agreed with the need to ensure that the number of cases is declining and pointed to a decrease in requests for tests as evidence that the number of people with symptoms is declining. They also pointed out that all 5 counties have sufficient healthcare capacity to manage the current caseload and more. In a press release, the commissioners said that they were, quote, dedicated to finding a safe way to get our citizens an opportunity to get back to work and get the economy moving again, end quote. The commissioners are pressing for a phase one reopening in alignment with the governor's three-phase plan. The phase calls for people at high risk to remain at home and others to maintain their social distancing. It would also limit social groups to no more than 10 people. A Portland Police Bureau vehicle was broken into early Thursday morning and equipment worth over $500 was stolen. Police officials say the incident occurred in the 3000 block of Northeast Everett Street sometime after 3 a.m. Items stolen from the vehicle include coveralls and lab coats with PPB patches, a half-mask respirator, a Tyvek suit, boots, and rain gear. A criminalist with the Forensic Evidence Division had the vehicle assigned to them and was alerted to the break-in when a community member reported one of the vehicle's windows was smashed out. The Bureau is asking that anyone with information regarding the burglary and missing equipment is urged to contact Sergeant Paul Meyer at paulmeyer@portlandoregon.gov or call the non-emergency line at 503-823-3333. According to data released by the U.S. Department of Labor yesterday, an additional 4.4 million Americans filed for jobless claims last week. That means that at least 26 million people have filed for unemployment benefits since the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. The job losses more than wipes out the 22 million jobs that have been gained since the end of the Great Recession. Over the last 3 weeks, there has been a decline in jobless claims, but the numbers are still staggering, and many economists say that as the economic shutdown continues, there could be a second wave of layoffs. The jobless numbers continue a wave of bad news. Today, it was announced that COVID-19 deaths have passed the 50,000 mark in the United States. 1 month ago, it was fewer than 1,000. At his morning briefing, President Trump said, quote, right now we are heading to 50,000, and according to projections, we will end up with 60,000 by the end of the pandemic, end quote. Unfortunately, at the current rate, the U.S. will pass 60,000 deaths before the end of this month. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, The Struggle. Tonight's weather, we will have some light rain late with a low of 54 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy in the morning with a mix of sun and clouds in the afternoon and a high of 64. Today in history, in 1990, the Hubble Space Telescope was launched from Space Shuttle Discovery. It was built by NASA with help from the European Space Agency and remains in use as the largest and most versatile telescope in orbit. Quote of the day is from Edwin Powell Hubble, the astronomer for whom the telescope is named. He said, quote, equipped with his five senses, man explores the universe around him and calls the adventure science. President Trump has shown an interest in using disinfectant to treat COVID-19 patients. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has this story.
During the administration's daily coronavirus briefing yesterday, Donald Trump suggested that injecting disinfectant may be a quick way to knock out the coronavirus. His comments brought a quick backlash from healthcare professionals. NBC News healthcare analyst Dr. Vin Gupta challenged the president's dangerous messaging and said, quote, this notion of injecting or ingesting any type of cleansing product into the body is irresponsible and it's dangerous, end quote. And he went on to say that it's a method that people use to kill themselves. During the briefing, DHS science and technology head Bill Bryan said that research by his team showed that the coronavirus dies quickly in the sunlight. That prompted these comments from the president.
Then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number in the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me.
The makers of Lysol quickly refuted Trump and issued a warning this morning that said, quote, Under no circumstances should our disinfectant products be administered into the human body through injection, ingestion, or any other route, end quote. After receiving over 100 calls soon after the president made his remarks, the Maryland Emergency Management Agency was forced to issue a public warning to citizens not to inject or ingest disinfectant. This is not the first time the president has touted a questionable or unproven treatment for the virus. In March, he touted hydroxychloroquine as a potential game changer. In late March, an Arizona man died and his wife was sickened after having ingested chloroquine phosphate, believing it would protect them from becoming infected with the coronavirus. Earlier today, the Food and Drug Administration issued a warning stating that, quote, hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine have not been shown to be safe and effective for treating or preventing COVID-19, end quote. The FDA went on to say that patients treated with the drug had shown serious heart arrhythmia problems. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
Earlier today, President Trump said that he would not approve any bailout for the U.S. Postal Service unless it dramatically raises prices. The remarks were made as Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin is said to be working with the USPS on a loan authorized through the coronavirus relief legislation. The post office has seen a 30% reduction in mail volume as a result of the coronavirus pandemic and has said it needs $75 million cash and loan bailout to survive. Trump has said the agency loses money on package delivery for Amazon and other online retailers because it is, quote, cozy with big corporations. Trump has frequently said that he thinks the relationship between the post office and Amazon is one-sided, but critics point out that the real problem may be with Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon and the owner of the Washington Post, a frequent Trump nemesis. The most recent coronavirus relief package specifically excluded the post office. During the signing ceremony for that package, Trump said, quote, if they raise the price of a package by approximately 4 times, it would be a whole new ballgame, end quote. A lobbying group that formed in response to Trump's attacks on the USPS said that quadrupling costs for package delivery would raise prices for consumers, small businesses, and rural communities. Many have expressed concern about what they see as a Republican effort to privatize the post office. Earlier today, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reiterated that position, saying it's related to the privatization and anti-government beliefs of the administration and of Republicans. But she went on to say that there was bipartisan support for financial relief for the United States Postal Service. Later in the day, the president softened his tone somewhat with a tweet saying that he would, quote, never let the post office fail. The people that work there are great, and we're going to keep them happy, healthy, and safe, end quote. Many wonder if it was simply an effort to appease the 600,000 workers, many of whom are voters. President Trump today signed the $484 billion relief package for small businesses and hospitals into law. The stimulus package is primarily aimed at those businesses that did not receive money from the initial $349 billion that was set aside for them in the Paycheck Protection Program that was part of the $2 trillion CARES Act passed in March. That money ran out after 2 weeks amid concerns that many of the small businesses most in need were losing out to larger companies with access to alternative funding sources. The Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP as it's referred to, provides low-interest free loans to small businesses so that they can keep their employees on payroll. This package targets $320 billion for paycheck protection and is free of fees for amounts up to $10 million for businesses and nonprofits. Employers who keep their payroll throughout the coronavirus emergency may also be forgiven payroll, rent, utility, and mortgage interest payments for up to 8 weeks. Unlike the previous package, $60 billion is set aside for small and medium-sized banks to lend out. The package also provides $100 billion for hospitals. $75 billion is available to cover operating expenses and lost revenue associated with COVID-19, and $25 billion is there to cover testing equipment and the cost of testing associated with the pandemic. It's been ruled that Alaska Native corporations are eligible to receive funds from the $2 trillion CARES Act. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native corporations can receive shares of the $8 billion tribal set-aside in the CARES Act, according to the Trump administration. 11 tribes have filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Treasury over the matter. A hearing was held Thursday morning in federal court as attorneys for tribes and Alaska Native corporations waited to hear from the Trump administration. In a brief filed Thursday evening, the Treasury Department issued its determination that ANCs are eligible. Tribes are concerned the ANCs could take more than half the funding and believe it should only go to tribal governments. Another hearing is scheduled for Friday afternoon. The government brief also opposes a motion by three Sioux tribes, which also seek to block ANCs from the funding. The date for the disbursement of Tribal CARES Act funding is Sunday. This week in Rapid City, South Dakota, community members held a drive-by car caravan to thank Indian Health Service employees. China Lockett has more.
People honk horns, wave out car windows, and hold up signs thanking essential employees. Healthcare workers line the sidewalks and wave back, their eyes grinning behind their face masks. Richie Richards organized the event.
We just wanted to find a way to thank and honor our friends and relatives who are working up here on the Sioux Sand campus, including the IHS, the Oyate Health Center employees, and everybody else that has a job up here.
Richard says healthcare can be especially stressful right now, since people still have to show up and take care of medical issues not related to the pandemic. He decided the busy employees needed a morale boost, and nearly 30 cars showed up.
And a good rally like this and showing support for them, it's going to lift them up, lift their spirits up, and give them that little extra motivation to come and show up like they do on a daily basis.
Geraldine Church is the president of the Great Plains Tribal Chairman's Health Board and Oyate Health Center on the Sioux Sand campus.
Our job as administration is to give our frontline workers the support and the resources that they need to stay safe and to feel supported, because they're providing that to the community and they need that.
The Sioux Sand campus is taking steps to direct patients showing potential symptoms of COVID-19 to designated areas to prevent spreading it.
Thank you.
For National Native News, I'm China Lockett in Rapid City.
The American Indian Graduate Center has partnered with American Indigenous business leaders to help distribute care packages to Native elders. Angelique Albert is the executive director of the American Indian Graduate Center based in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
We have a fund set aside to help with community type projects that is named after our founder, John Rayner. So we decided to take funds from that initiative and put towards this. Also, we decided to help with feet on the ground. With our students in those communities already, they will be partnering with the ABLE students in those chapters to help them deliver food to our elders.
She says taking care of elders is an important tribal value.
This initiative is particularly important because, you know, elders were our first educators, but really they continue to be the keepers of our wisdom, our culture, our languages, tribal ecological knowledge. When it comes to those things, we have so much to learn. And it's so important that we keep them healthy so that they can continue to teach us. There's value there. But also, you know, going back to our sense of community and always taking care of each other. I'm very honored to be a part of this project.
Food, water, and cleaning products are part of the care packages. The Graduate Center has committed $10,000 to the project. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Next Tuesday, Ohio holds its primary elections, and Maryland's 7th District holds a special election to fill the seat long held by the late Elijah Cummings. With more on those stories, here's Lily Bolke with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
I want to make sure that the national level, that no one takes Ohio as an example, and quite frankly, that Ohio doesn't take this primary as an example, is how to ever run an election again.
Ohio League of Women Voters President Jen Miller, on next Tuesday's primary elections, delayed from mid-March because of the new coronavirus. Most Ohioans are expected to vote via no excuse needed absentee ballot. In-person voting will only be available for people who are homeless or have disabilities. But Miller has some concerns.
This system is not designed for prime time.
She says it's inefficient and was designed for far fewer voters.
And now we are trying to transition millions of voters, potentially, and 88 different county boards of elections to an all-male system. Keeping in mind that about 85% of Ohioans wait to vote on election day.
Miller says the hurry to hold elections next week strains election boards and voters alike.
In fact, we will never know what percentage of folks did not participate because of how difficult the process was.
Maryland's primaries have been postponed to June 2nd, but there will be a special election Tuesday in the 7th District to fill Representative Elijah Cummings' seat. He passed away last fall. Ballots were sent to all registered voters. There will be 3 in-person voting sites for those who can't use the mail. As more political action moves online, yesterday Everytown for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action held their 2nd virtual rally this week. Moms Demand Action founder Sharon Watts urged voters to stay engaged.
This pandemic has increased the risks of domestic violence, suicide, and unintentional shootings.
Countering the National Rifle Association's rating system, the advocates awarded Gun Sense distinctions to 700 candidates across the country, not to demonstrate endorsement, but to acknowledge these contenders, quote, will govern with gun safety in mind, unquote. Everytown was founded to counter the NRA by billionaire former New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who still largely funds it. Both the former presidential candidate and the organization have endorsed former Vice President Joe Biden. They're spending $60 million on this year's elections, says Everytown President Sean Feinblatt.
In 2018, we elected a Gun Sense majority to the U.S. House, as well as Gun Sense governors and legislators across the country. And then we elected a Gun Sense majority in Virginia, which, in case any of you have forgotten it, happens to be the NRA's home state.
Meanwhile, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren's eldest brother, Donald Herring, died from COVID-19 this week. While President Donald Trump denies knowing about the latest turnover in his administration, Dr. Rick Bright, now former director of the Department of Health and Human Services Division, working to develop a coronavirus vaccine, said he had been pressured to direct money at, quote, potentially dangerous drugs promoted by those with political connections, unquote, including President Trump. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
Today, Climate Connections looks at beavers and how they can help in adapting to climate change. We go now to Dr. Anthony Lazowitz.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Beavers often get a bad rap for cutting down trees and building unwanted ponds on private property. But Jen Vanderhoof of Washington State's King County Department of Natural Resources and Parks wants to help redeem this hardworking rodent's reputation.
We're very obviously concerned about climate change, and I feel like beavers could help us.
In the Northwest, warming temperatures and earlier snowmelt could cause water shortages in the summer. But after beavers build a dam,
not only do you have more water being stored on the surface, but it's also filtering down into the groundwater, and so you're storing more water both above and below the surface that way.
Beaver ponds can also help slow water down as it flows through a watershed. That can help prevent erosion and reduce flooding after heavy precipitation. Vanderhoof says the wet landscapes that beavers create can even help control wildfires.
They're basically creating natural fire breaks.
So she helps people find ways to manage beavers on their properties without killing or trapping them. And she says in some areas, introducing beavers can provide important climate benefits.
They've got it all figured out. If we can just figure out how to work with them a little bit better.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 24th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jeffrey Wade, Ray Bodwell, and Althea Billings. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is The Tireless Auto. Special thanks to Lily Polke and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. The Evening News and all of our KBOO programs are made possible through listener support. If you would like to support us, you can go online to kboo.fm/give or go on our mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for Counterspin. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson, recording remotely. This week on Counterspin, the astonishing cruelty and cravenness of a profit-driven healthcare system is on full display right now. As persistent as the problem is elite media's evident investment in brushing off efforts to do anything more than just document and lament it. We talked about that in March 2019 with Diane Archer, founder and former president of the Medicare Rights Center and president of Just Care USA. We'll hear that conversation again today. Also on the show, climate disruption, the catastrophes it's causing and will cause, is another area where corporate media